We are Two Guys Gaming. Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you've found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. In this episode, I will be reading and reacting to Chapters 4, 5, and 6. Chapter 4. We awake in Wade's first class, world history. He gives a brief description of his teacher's avatar, typical Tweedy college professor type, and talks about how much all of his Oasis teachers enjoy their jobs. Because the software closes off all distractions, teachers can just teach. And boy, can they teach. The simulation provides the opportunity to give VR-fueled lessons from the history of King Tut to the moons of Jupiter and all points between and beyond. Lunchtime gives him time to reminisce on the structure of the quote-unquote geography of the Oasis. This also gives the author a chance to elaborate on this topic himself. 27 cube-shaped sectors, stacked in such a way as to mimic a Rubik's Cube, contain hundreds of planets each. The sectors all measure 1,000 light-years cubed. Availability of light-speed travel and teleportation make it easier to traverse these distances and open all of the worlds to possible exploration. The worlds include ones programmed by the Oasis staff, either with a plan of meticulous coding or randomly generated a la Minecraft. The company also leased the rights to other worlds, like Azeroth from World of Warcraft. Before long, one could travel in the worlds of Firefly, Star Wars, and even Star Trek II. Virtually, parenthetically, pun kind of intended, any world you can imagine exists somewhere in the simulation. I said last episode, quote-unquote, poor in real life and poor in the Oasis. Our hero can only afford the travel if he hitches a ride with H and noobs it up in a starting zone until he receives enough to travel back for school the next day. This almost happens never now because H is too high level and Wade doesn't want to get stuck in a world too long to miss school. He's on super double, parenthetically, not so secret probation for absences. Even so, he managed to kobold kill his way up to third level for now. He needs to rectify this in some way. As a gunter, if he hopes to find the prize, he figures he must get at least to 10th level so that the community accepts him as a serious competitor. He tried to find jobs to fund his search, but the job market sucks. So, stuck at school, with little hope of getting out, he ends the chapter, feeling a bit sorry for himself. Chapter 5. The class after lunch, Advanced Oasis Studies. A senior elective to learn about Oasis and the creators. For Wade, a cakewalk class and an easy A. Because of that, he spent most of his time trolling, parenthetically, good-naturedly, his teacher about the minor inconsistencies in the curriculum. As most teachers do, he ignores these slights in favor of educating the rest of the class. Advanced Oasis Studies gives Wade an opportunity to talk about his hero. It also offers the author a chance to give us the history of Halliday and the creation of the Oasis. Will the deus ex machina never cease? Seriously, though. Sorry for that editorial. He adores and worships Halliday and puts him in a pantheon of god-level geeks. The teacher reads from a biography in class. Wade has already read it 4 times, so he chooses to ignore the urge to correct and instead focuses on any clues that he might have missed. Halliday grew up as a smart but social reject. Like many of us, he found solace in computers, comic books, video games. You know, the nerd safe havens. While reading a copy of the Dungeons & Dragons Handbook, he gets invited to a session and immediately feels welcomed and accepted. The kid who invited him, Ogden Morrow, becomes the Wozniak to Halliday's jobs, or vice versa. Halliday created his first game, NRX Quest, on his TRS-80 he received for Christmas, instead of the more popular and expensive Commodore 64. In my own personal history, I got a Commodore 64, but I did play around with the TRS-80s as well. He made the game to share with his buddies, but they enjoyed it so much that they convinced him to distribute it to a wider audience. They copied the game onto floppies, included a copy of the instructions in a Ziploc bag, and put it on one of the wire racks at the local computer store. It reminded me of the beginnings of id Software and Doom, how they released Doom at the time in a very similar way. They start the company Gregarious Games and port Anorak's Quest to the other computers at the time. The company grows, they move out of the basement into a strip mall, and quote-unquote take the video game industry by storm. Mara runs the business and PR side of things. Halliday, all the usual markers of high-functioning autism, codes, and codes some more. He also gives weird interviews, fires employees on a whim, and codes some more. Eventually, the company goes public, and the stock makes them both very rich. They buy mansions, fancy cars, a Lambo and a DeLorean, parenthetically, and memorabilia from the 80s. That's mostly Halliday. Chris and I talk about this all the time, that if we were wealthier, if we hit the lottery, we would buy dumb stuff like comic books that we shouldn't be able to afford and all that kind of stuff. So I can again sympathize with these two guys. Then, for a long time, nothing happened. The only news involved cryptic announcements about something new and revolutionary. In the absence of official word, rumors swirled. Word of new hardware, scuttlebutt of possible bankruptcy. During the holiday season of 2012, they rebranded the company and launched the Oasis. At first an MMO, it quickly outgrew that label. Oasis offered just that to the people stuck in the desert of the drudgery of real life. Like any other MMO, Oasis offered users the ability to change the things about them that they wanted to change. It also allowed them to be who they were. However, it extended that freedom to include the ability to create a planet, build a mansion, furnish it, and invite inhabitants from all over the world to a party. Four things went into making the Oasis a one-stop escape. Number one, the VR helmet projected right onto the user's retina, and the haptic gloves allowed for realistic touch feedback. Number two, the software that ran Oasis came with less limitations in the amount of simultaneous users. Instead of thousands, it borrowed resources from every PC connected and allowed for millions of concurrent logins. Number three, Morrow put together a great marketing campaign. And number four, because nothing can exist in capitalism without this, they built commerce into it. As it became more popular, they realized that by zoning one sector as commercial, they could make millions or potentially billions in rent and sale of their own virtual merchandise. Oasis became synonymous with the internet. People worked, played, and lived in what started out simply as a virtual reality MMO. Chapter 6. Latin. Taken only because Halliday took the class and included some words and phrases in his early games, gives an opportunity to daydream and think more about the first clue in the contest. While Oasis prevents students from accessing other programs in school, Wade, of course, found a workaround. He uses the school library to access the Almanac. It becomes his Bible. He even printed a copy for offline access. Before taking another shot at deciphering the riddle, he lists off the required reading, viewing, and playing list if you want to be as cool as Halliday. Again, if you're my age or your parents are and they tried to expose you to 80s pop culture, nothing here comes as a surprise. If you are younger and wonder why people obsess over this stupid decade, well, he gives you dozens of reference points to see if you can figure it out for yourself. Ironically, none of that helped Wade with his first breakthrough. Instead, the world of D&D led him on the path to his place on the leaderboard. While reading the book, he notices notches in certain letters. When taken together, they form another rhyming clue that Gunter's called the Limerick. Some douchebag revealed it to the public, got famous, and became the ridicule of the Gunter community. Because everybody knew about it, just nobody went public with it. When he went public with it, it was sort of that too cool for school type attitude that they took about him. And here is that riddle. The copper key waits explorers in a tomb filled with horrors. But you have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers. So the first line, no biggie, there's a copper key to be found. Second line, this leads him to the D&D module Tomb of Horrors. He uses this revelation to explain D&D to anyone not familiar. Then he makes a connection between D&D and his life in Oasis. Halliday must have built the tomb and hid it somewhere in the simulation. The obvious first place to look is the planet Gygax, one of Halliday's creations and named for one of the creators of Dungeons & Dragons. Alas, and of course, it comes up empty. No mention of Tomb of Horrors on the main Gunter wiki, so it's either too obvious or his theory is completely off base. Knowing what I do so far, I'm going to go with too obvious. The kid has something with the tomb. That's just not the location. Sure enough, at the end of the chapter, he has an epiphany. having focused on the quote unquote much to learn part, he first just tosses it aside. In the back of his brain, though, he turns it over and over. Then, right at the end of the chapter, he gets an idea. But he must wait until next episode, hopefully on Wednesday, to find out what it is. Maybe you can figure it out before then. You have 3 days, 2 days, 3 days, depending on when you listen to this. And now for my reaction. So far, I enjoy this book much more than I ever did Dragons of the Seed. That surprises me for a couple reasons. A, the part of me stunted emotionally in my teen years cries out in pain. Anytime we must admit that something we enjoyed during that time is no longer relevant. Like I said at the end of the previous series, I now understand the dilemma of Star Wars fans through the Rey trilogy. B, after reading some of the critiques of the book, I expected them to affect my enjoyment of the book more. I take Injustice very seriously, and being reminded, parenthetically again, about the Hari Kondabolu documentary about Apu, learning something that you enjoy caused harm should make you reconsider that thing. Say what you want about quote-unquote cancel culture, we all just need to be kinder to get along in this sandbox. And finally, C, those first two chapters, especially that first one, layered it on a bit thick. As we saw with Dragons of Deceit, things can go south pretty quickly. But where I quickly lost faith in the protagonist of that book and never fully recovered, I easily shifted from annoyance to acceptance and even some enjoyment in this book. I know much of this is because Wade's journey is much more relatable than Destina's. That bothers me. Look, I get it. I said last episode that if it's not for you, maybe it's just not for you. Well, Destina Rosethorn clearly was not for me, because I tried and I tried, and it never happened. So, why worry? Well, apparently that's just who I am right now. Chris and I just talked about how old age makes us simultaneously more sensitive, but also more cynical. Low T, am I right? Seriously, though, if any of those fake boner pills want to sponsor the series, contact me. I probably ruined my chances by calling them fake boner pills, but who knows? Contact me. We'll make a deal. Anyhow, back to my worries. In my conversation with Chris, I also expressed some concern in that I show less compassion at work. Like, all I want to do is teach them math. So when they talked about how the teachers in Oasis just get to teach, boy, did that hit. Maybe that's how it should be. But we get told by society that teachers need to be all of the things. So much so that I wanted to start a TikTok called, quote unquote, "I'm a teacher, not a dot dot dot," in which I list all of the jobs that teachers are asked to do by society and why they are difficult and why we shouldn't be expected to do them, at least not solely. Okay, dude, what does this have to do with Destina and Ready Player One? Well, you might remember from the previous series, parenthetically, and if you didn't listen, it's only 5 to 6 hours, less if you 1.5 or 2 times it. And there's some good stuff in there, in my opinion. That towards the end, I wondered if I was losing my capacity for empathy. Through everything else that helped define me as a person, if I lose that, who am I? No, you're not witnessing a midlife crisis, parenthetically, maybe part of one, or a complete loss of identity. Not yet, anyway. But I couldn't sympathize with her, and I very much can with him. And here's the kicker. In many ways, Wade is just like me. Hashtag literally me, right? We both endured the slings and arrows of school bullies. We found solace in the fictional worlds of fantasy and science fiction. We got to the end of high school without any real plan for quote unquote what's next. I'm sure as I continue to read, I'll find more similarities. So what does that say about me? Has my empathy always been performative and just for those like me? Jesus, what is this book doing to me? I think we will continue to unpack this over the next couple of months. I swear I never went into this expecting it to become therapy, but the heart wants what it wants, I guess. Here's my compromise. When I feel therapy coming on, I will warn you, in case you want to skip that part and just get to my professional analysis of the characters and plot. So, about those characters. Other than Wade and maybe H, parenthetically, jury's out on them one. My first impression looks promising. I can do without all of them. A, maybe that's part of the book's hidden gems that I'm slowly discovering. First, gives abused nerds like me an outlet to let our teenage selves heal. Two, the subtle metaphor that the personality of people we meet online are two-dimensional and conform to our expectation. Mind blown. But seriously, story doesn't need supporting characters with well-considered traits and histories, but it definitely helps. Also regarding the characters, I think I already alluded to this, but I can do without the gamer bro pissing contests. I never understood them to begin with. I don't find them endearing or even tolerable, and I more or less skimmed those passages in an attempt to avoid them here. I hope they don't become the norm and only serve the purpose here that Wade is one of the king dorks and show off his bona fides. In closing, so far, I like the pacing of the book too. It goes at a pretty good pace, in my opinion. He's given us the shadows of a villain who saw school and a brief introduction of leisure time in Oasis. The protagonist represents a true hero to our dorky teenage selves who wish to save the world and amass untold riches. So that's it for this episode. I'll be back hopefully on Wednesday with the next episode. I'll do 3 more chapters to try to get caught up. And then on next Sunday, I'll try to do the next episode after that. If you're reading along or you want to bring it along, you can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles, a link to our socials, including our YouTube, which hopefully will start up again tomorrow with the daily RPG calendar that I was doing earlier, and maybe some other gameplay videos, since those seem to get quite a few hits. Not a ton of hits, obviously, but more hits than the other stuff. And maybe just by doing it more consistently, we'll get more hits that way too. As always, thanks for listening. I hope to talk to you again on Wednesday. See you then. Bye, guys.
We are...